numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Thursday morning to you. It is a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network, Visa.com, the Visa app, Fubo Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. It's all brought to you by BetMGM Nevada, Gil Alexander, and Matt Santos in for Kelly Bidlin this morning. Good morning to you, Matthew.
Good morning, Gil. How you doing, man?
I'm good, dude. Does your mom call you Matthew? Does she call you that?
No.
She does not.
No. It's my mom's birthday.
Hey, happy birthday,
happy
Mom.
Happy birthday, Mom.
Yeah. Happy birthday to Mom. All right. Well, so, is she listening or no?
Probably not. She's
probably
at work.
Okay. All right. Well,
grinding.
I'll tell you who is. These guys who are kind enough to come on the show today. Also, a lot listening to the show. We always appreciate that. Bill Krakenberger will be here, of course, hour number two. Josh Towers in studio. Looking forward to that, talking baseball with Josh Towers. Last time Josh was here, he made the outlandish claim that he invented the question mark and that the Yankees would sit Aaron Judge before he... if they had clinched and he hadn't tied or broken the record. Well, I'll talk to him about that. By the way, congratulations to Aaron Judge on becoming 12 home runs shy of the actual home run record. We just want to point that out. Both things are true, boys and girls. It's awesome, and it's also not the record. Andy McNeil to talk Central Division hockey with us. We will also talk to Adam Kramer on college football this hour. John Legace has got baseball and football thoughts. And, Jeff Parles, were you able to book Jeff Parlay? Is that really true? That's amazing. Jeff Parlay on the show, ladies and gentlemen. You may know him as a producer on this here show. And host. By the way, this is from Action Cookbook on Twitter, speaking of the judge. These are two perfect tweets. He goes, finally, Aaron Judge has done it. He's pulled to within 12 of the single-season home run record. I still think it's neat. He's having a great season, and it's fun. Quit lying about what it is, though. Ladies and gentlemen, let's hold two thoughts in our heads at the same time. Both things are true. We love Aaron Judge. And by the way, wouldn't he look beautiful in a Giants uniform next year? But yeah, he ties Roger Maris last night, so good on him for doing so. He finally he got there, and then still has a chance to break it now. He's got a whole week of baseball in which to do that. Speaking of baseball, a setback for our Braves bet last night. My goodness. It looked like for a long time it was going to be two losses, or maybe the Braves could have eked out a win against the Nationals last night. But the Marlins took a 4-0 lead against the Mets. Mets came all the way back to beat them in extras. Meanwhile, the Braves couldn't get any offense going against the Nationals. They lose in extras. And so what does that do as we head into the big Mets at Braves series this weekend? Well, I'll tell you what it does. Puts the Braves one game back and really, in effect, two games back because the Mets own the tiebreaker. So what does that mean now as this series starts? And by the way, it's a series that could be marred by weather. We hope not. Remember, they refused to, they already nixed any plans to push a game up earlier today. Both teams have an off day due to the effects or the potential effects of Hurricane Ian in Florida and then in Georgia subsequently. They decided nothing today. Perhaps a split doubleheader could be played on Sunday if need be. Perhaps any game that is scuttled could be played on August 6th, the day in between the last day of the regular season and the first day of the wild card round. Anyway, those are the contingency plans. As it is the case now, we have a Friday night game, which is going to be Chris Bassitt at Max Fried. Braves will be favored. And then the Saturday and Sunday games, as currently scheduled, the Mets will be favored. Remember, it'll be DeGrom against Kyle Wright. Then it'll be Scherzer against Charlie Morton. So if the Mets sweep, it's over. If the Mets win 2 out of 3, their magic number would be 1 heading into the final 3 games of the season, and it would effectively be over. It would take a miracle at that point for the Braves to win. If talking about the NL East. If the Braves sweep, the Braves would be in the lead heading into the final 3 games of the season. Remember, the final 3 games of the season, the Mets play the Nats and the Braves play the Marlins. And if the Braves win 2 out of 3, then we're tied and we're in effect right where we were yesterday heading into the final 3 games of the season, where the Mets' magic number would be 3, but in effect they couldn't slip up if the Braves keep applying pressure. Though at that point, the Braves wouldn't control the destiny. Both teams controlling destiny right now. But a setback for sure. Right now, the Braves plus 240, plus 260, somewhere in that range to win the division. But man, did that change it yesterday, because instead of the Braves only needing to win 2 of 3 to take the lead, now they need to sweep. So we shall see. What a fun weekend it is going to be. That is for sure, heading into the NL East. By the way, football tonight, of course. with that game not being played. So you can focus, if you have a bet on this Braves-Nationals bet to win the NL East, you can focus on football tonight. The Dolphins at the Bengals. The 3-0 Dolphins against the 1-2 Bengals. Drew Dinsick was on the show yesterday. He did a great job of breaking down why this is a brutal spot, if you're into spots, for the Dolphins, and why this is, of course, a great spot for the Bengals, and what he touched on. And he laid it out, and it's all true, right? Short turnaround week on the road, as always is the case for road teams on Thursdays. Not always, but usually. Tua battling an injury, appears like he will play. Waddle battling injuries, appears like he will play. Mike McDaniel, first time primetime game as a head coach on a short turnaround. I don't know how much I make of that. And just the fact that, you know, because I would also say this, it's not like he's going up against Gibbs and Pettibone. It's an old school reference, boys and girls. He's going up against Zach Taylor. But I will say this, so for me, again, now for my contest picks, so on the Megapod, I'm 7-2. We do 3 a week. In the Circa Millions, I'm 9-6, which is, you know, fine. Not going to win you any contests, but it's a fine record in real life. This is not going to be a play for me tonight. I'm not touching this. By the way, Dolphins traveled early. They're on their way to Cincinnati this morning to ensure they can actually get to Cincinnati. This per Adam Beasley of Pro Football Network. Hard to believe they'll have anywhere near the level of preparation, he said, needed to play at their highest level tomorrow. I don't know about that. I don't know. I think these are things we say. Okay, maybe they won't have their highest level of preparation, but does that necessarily affect your handicap? The other thing we're talking about, oh, they played the Bills and they were on the defense was on the field for 90 snaps, which we talked about. Oh my God, the Bills had 90 plays. Not all their players are on the field for all 90 plays, though. Right? They're usually on for 2/3 of those. So I guess all of that to say, for me, there's enough swirling around where I get the point about it being a bad spot. But I have enough respect for the Dolphins also to say, yeah, I'm not fading them. And I will say this about this game. The Dolphins, as I said yesterday, if the Dolphins figure out a way to win this game, and they can get to 4-0 after figuring out a way to beat Buffalo despite getting crushed in the box score, and then winning this on a short turnaround on the road, it is time for everybody to take the Dolphins seriously. Also, it also remains true that if the Bengals lose this and go to 1-3, I'm not going to say their season is over because it's not. There's 13 games left. But you've certainly put yourself behind the eight ball. Let's put it that way, 4 games into the season. And the margin for error becomes awfully thin moving forward. So no play for me on this one. I'll tell you what I do think I will have plays on, both from a Circa Millions and from a Survivor standpoint. First of all, Circa Millions. And a lot of this also gets back down to we're into week 4. Preseason convictions, maybe a sliver of that still plays into some of this, but it's kind of fading away. Now you're dealing with really what you're seeing on the football field now. But right now, if I'm filling out my Circa Millions entry right now, which you can't here early Thursday morning, but if I were right at this moment, I think I'm going with my 3 teams that I had on guessing lines conviction, which is Colts laying the points versus the Titans. That is preseason conviction on the Colts. I don't think they're as bad as people are making them out to be. I like that team. Don't like the Titans as much. I think the Colts would be one of my plays. I was surprised. I guessed that a little higher on Monday on guessing lines with Chrissy. The Raiders, for me, would be a play. The Raiders at 0-3, I think, get off the schneid. Gots to. It's a gots to win situation for the Raiders. And I just don't think the Broncos are a very good football team despite being 2-1. I think the Raiders figured it out this week. I think the Raiders will be a pick of mine. And then the last one was of the 3 that I had conviction on during guessing lines was the Rams in that Monday night game. Drew talked about this yesterday, too. He was on my page, which is, I think the wrong team's favorite here. So Colts, Raiders, and Rams from guessing lines. And then if you have to fill out, and this is the thing about going, all right, if you only have to pick 3 a week, which we do on the Megapod, which I'm recording right after this show with Todd, Jeff, and Adam Chernoff, our guest today, Beating the Book podcast, for those interested. 3 a week, so 7-2. As soon as you have to, you know, flesh it out to 5 a week, which is why these contests are so hard, well, there's going to be some drift off that, so 9-6. What are the other 2? And this is kind of what I'm talking about. Like, okay, how do you fill out the 5? Right now, I don't know if that Vikings number's 2.5 in London. I think I might do that. Vikings traveling tonight, spending as little time in London as possible. I like the Vikings during the offseason. I don't really see why I would, like, completely go away from that at this point. And then there's a game that I could honestly argue We ask a question on the Megapod. What's the game you want no part of? If you had to bet 15 games, what's the 16th you would want no part of? I could answer Cardinals-Panthers. At the same time, I could also say, and I'm getting to this, which is I would never play the Panthers, but I would only play the Cardinals. And so if I'm thinking of it that way, should that be a pick? So those would be the five. As far as Survivor's concerned, that's a whole nother dilemma. And I talked to Derek Stevens briefly on Sunday when I was at Circa. Brent Musburger, kind enough to honor me to have me on his show on Sunday. It's always an honor to be on with Brent. But I don't know with Survivor, the options. The Lions are hosting the Seahawks. That's been an option. But yesterday, Amon-Ra St. Brown, DeAndre Swift, T.J. Hockenson, others didn't even practice for the Lions. The Chargers are consideration at the Texans. Justin Herbert limited practice yesterday. The Packers are hosting the Patriots. That's the biggest bet, spread on the board. But of the remaining 1,550 players in Survivor, what percentage are going to play the Packers? 50%? Am I crazy to think that? So I want to inject a little game theory and not play them just in case. Then do you put your stock in the Giants against the Bears? I don't know that I want to do that. The Eagles are playing the Jags. Jags are pretty feisty. Do I really want to play the Eagles in Survivor? So it's the second straight week. What I'm getting at here is 2 years and 3 weeks of the Circa Survivor era. Yet last week was the first week in all of that I recommended and played spreads of fewer than 3 points. I think I'm doing that again. I think I'm playing the Raiders as one of mine. That's what it's come to. That's the mayhem that is Survivor this year in the National Football League. John Legace on Baseball and Football next. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open the account. Open an account, I should say, and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week, I guarantee. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. Ladies and gentlemen, he's plucked from the bleachers at Yankee Stadium, right out of Central Casting. But he knows more about betting than the average guy in the bleachers. We'll give him that. It's John Legace from Mayo Media, doing baseball, doing football these days. How you doing, man?
Gil, what's up, man? You know, I was just tweeting before, it feels good. People finally hate the Yankees again. It means they're doing something right.
We actually had that tweet prepared to go. This is exactly what you said. You said, feels so good to have people hating on the Yankees again. It's been a while since I really felt it. Well, let me ask you this, Mr. Legace, because I have said this on the show, and I was going to say this to Josh Towers a little later. I've said before, I was like, I can't wait to bet against the Yankees in the division series. So I am among those haters. Just because I don't think they are that well-rounded, do you dispute that?
No, I think that's the major flaw with this team. But you also know going up against them, in a vacuum, in any single game scenario, you could be just running into a buzzsaw that there isn't. Maybe wearing Dodger blue. You got to give it up. The Dodgers, I think they play after my bedtime. Sometimes I sell them a little short. But that Yankee offense is really good as they're getting the pieces back. And I think we spoke about that midseason, that they were going to go through the ebbs and flows of injuries. It's a different team when they're healthy on offense.
Yeah, I mean, I guess part of that also for me, though, is, you know, so when Judge was hitting tons of homers, making his way up to 60, and the division was still in the balance. It was, you know, it was closer. At one point, it got a little dicey, but it didn't so much at the end. But when it was still in the balance, and we used to say, we're like, why are they pitching to him? Like, nobody currently at that time in this lineup is going to beat him. And now, when he was trying to chase the record here at the end, you know, you had Stephen A's of the world who are like, oh, my God, pitch to him, whatever. Meanwhile, the Blue Jays are in a, you know, race for a wild card. That's what they should have done. They should have been very careful. And by the way, there's a lot of 3-2 counts before he finally, you know, when he would get walked during this series, and then he finally hit one. So that was a little, to me, not really a well-founded argument either, because the Blue Jays were kind of testing him, even though a lot of them ended up in walks. I guess what I'm saying is, in the postseason, unless the people around him, unless the guys in the lineup around him can really make you pay for it, I would start that strategy, right? I'd be like, okay, well, you're not going to beat me. Everybody else should.
Well, that's absolutely viable. To your point about the treatment, that he received, I mean, I'm old enough to remember Barry Bonds. That's nothing like what we saw from Barry Bonds, right?
Nothing.
Bases loaded, intentional walks. That was nothing like it. Pitchers were attacking the zone. Once you're behind 2-0 to Aaron Judge, then it just really just makes sense to put him on first. He can't kill you from there. He can only hurt you a little bit. So whatever. It's too much overreacting to small samples of baseball. That's what it is. To your second point, I think it might depend on where the Yankees slot him. I mean, he's got to be the tallest and heaviest leadoff hitter I can remember.
That's for sure.
But the past 15 days or so, Aaron Judge is leading off. If he's leading off, you walk him right off the bat. He doesn't have the legs to take the base. I think the Yankees might pull back on that, depending what the contact rates maybe look like, depending who's on the bump. You can get the same on-base stuff from Rizzo and challenge them to have that attack plan versus Judge with a man on where it's not as viable. You see where I'm going with that? I'm curious to see what the Yankees do with the lineup placement, because the leadoff stuff is working, but I don't know if it's going to win the playoffs.
It makes baseball and then the postseason so interesting. You know, again, we said it a million times. 80% of NBA favorites get through, largely because of the first round. Stats by Lopez putting this out that, you know, for hockey, for that to manifest, for that percentage of favorites to get through, you'd have to play a best of 51. That's how random it is for that before that manifested. In baseball, it's best of 75. That's how random baseball is. It's an amazing thing to context to put in. It's great stat. All right, you do have a baseball play today.
Yeah. Oh, man, was I so excited because everything's foosball now to be breaking down some baseball. Check it out. We're going to Seattle. I want a piece of the Texas Rangers today. F5 money line. I saw it on the right side of even money, so I saw plus 105. Definitely look for it at least at even money. So we want Texas Rangers, F5, money line. Give me John Gray, King of the North, Young Wolf of Winterfell. I love it, man. 364 ERA, 111 whip, the 634 OPS, looking good across the board. 20% K-minus walk. He could beat you in the zone or out. 35 chase rate, 84 in-zone contact. So we're always looking for that. He keeps it low. He keeps it slow. The grill master's keeping it off the bone. 45 ground ball, 30 hard hit, sub-1 home run per nine. So really, there's that tapestry. He does it all. The discipline stats, elevation, batted ball quality, everything is in check. And against righties, he's really doing what I love to see, is pitchers putting their best pitch to the four. So he's throwing the slider first, 44 use, 309 X-Lug, 44% whiff on your featured pitch. That's why he's been so very good going up against Marco Gonzalez. I mean, I don't know. He's at that point where 89 mile an hour on the fastball is just not doing it. People see the 4 ERA. I see the XFIP and Sierra north of 4.9. Single digit K-minus walk, 20 home runs to righties year to date. Last 13 games started, 3 earned runs 9 times. 5 earned runs or more 5 times. I mean, this guy's getting beat up since the All-Star break, and Texas hits lefties last 1,100 plate appearances, right? Not nothing. 334 team wOBA, 118 WRC+. I mean, it's low. Jung, Simeon, Duran, they all hit lefties well. The Seattle O has been good last 7, but what about Julio? They don't have the piece that really strikes fear in the heart. And we're only looking for 15 now, so race to 15. I think we have the pitching edge and the offensive edge. I'm surprised this one's at even money. Give me Texas F5 money line plus 105 today.
Talking to John Legeza, you can find him on Twitter at John Legeza. That's L-A-G-H-E-Z-Z-A. Phonetically, Lag Heza. All right, John, here's the thing. If people are following you on Twitter, they know that you've you're transitioning slowly, right, from baseball over to football, and the real
beast,
your real passion right now, and you practically beg me via text, via subtweets. You're like, you gotta ask me about these line moves. So I want to ask you about them because you are you're really into the predictive measures that you're taking for that in the NFL. Yep. What did you get this week?
Well, this week we've kind of been in front of just about everything. I hate to be like that because I really like to know to stay in my lane, right? You want to be confident without being arrogant, although sometimes you have to be willing to push up against that borderline there. That's just what it is. Hopefully you're surrounded by enough positive people that they'll kind of pull you back in. But we've been in front of everything, and it's because of, like I said, the ML jiggle, that money line jiggle. This is very similar to reading the tape in trading. We look for money to come in on the games, right? That's intuitive. It makes sense. The thing with football betting is there are two levels to the line, let's call it. There's a price, but then there's also the number. So what's happening, Gil, is volume is creating change in the money line. That change in the money line is affecting the value of the point offered, which makes a lot of sense. And that becomes a leading indicator of the change. So it's I do appreciate the P word. I try not to use the word predictive too much, because I actually think this might be more of a self-fulfilling prophecy, which is fine, right? I'm not trying to tell the future. I am trying to read the tape, right? That's what I am trying to do. Use a data-backed, 1,000% wholly objective measure to determine value in the market to portend shifts in the line. And that's exactly what we've seen. I put it out every day. It's on Patreon. Right now it's free for another couple days. But even after that, it's $2 a week. It's just to keep the lights on. The idea is when you see these cost per points hit the single digits, you're going to see the line move, because the book is generally trying to push us against the spread. They want to make their money on volume. They're more than willing to eat the minus 10 on both sides, and they're going to get paid no matter what. Where they get beat up is when underdogs start overproducing and the public is on it first. So that's what I've been finding. Value on the underdogs from a cost per point lens has been the leading indicator to portend line shifts. That's as good as I could put it in 120 seconds or less.
And that was a wonderful explanation, especially for new time bettors, right? A wonderful explanation for new-ish bettors who haven't necessarily thought of things that way. The four teams, real quick, and just give me a 10-second answer to this because I have a follow-up and we don't have much time, but the four teams that applied to, the four games that it applied to this week were?
Okay, I had Arizona going from +2 to +1.5. We had Cleveland going from -1.5 to 1. We had New England going to at least +10. They crossed that, went to +9.5. Ooh, the last one. Oh, I kind of dropped it right now.
That's
I don't want to mislead anybody.
All right.
Feel free to listen. Go check the page. I put everything out in front of the public. I'm willing to take these L's, but we have really outproduced the market. It's been ridiculous.
Okay, so here's the thing, John. The theory behind all this is the higher rate at which you get ahead of those line moves, the better you will do long term. Short term sample sizes, though, can go either way. How has it worked out the first 3 weeks of the season?
Well, it's been excellent, but again, you have to understand the luck element, and I'll tell you this is exactly what happened. We picked up on San Fran +1 last weekend, and I said to smash it immediately. It would close at -1.5. It did exactly that. Guess what? San Fran lost by 1. Our people cashed. That's a major win.
Okay. It was just interesting to look at things that way again. It's all at John Legesa on Twitter.
Thank you.
Thank you, John. Always a pleasure, man.
Awesome. Yeah.
John Legesa, always passionate about what he's doing. We'll come back on the other side. College football with Adam Kramer. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
The NHL season is almost here, and our hockey betting experts are ready for all the action. The Visa Hockey Season Prep Guide is available now with strategies and best bets for the season ahead. Get in-depth analysis from our hockey experts, including Andy McNeil, with predictions for teams and players, win totals, daily betting tips, season-long trends to watch, plus three things every new NHL bettor should know. We'll get into some of that a little later with Andy. This guide is a must-have with key insights and data for both avid hockey bettors and those new to the sport. Give yourself an edge this season and get the Visa Hockey Season Prep Guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Matt Santos, biggest news in the morning. And I know it's rattling everybody's cage here. It's just absolutely mind-wrecking. Pete Davidson was the one who broke up with Kim Kardashian? Is that the news?
I'm finding a hard time believing that one.
Big deal. Big deal. Ladies and gentlemen, Adam Kramer knows about all such things related to the Kardashians. He also knows some college football. He writes for VSiN.com and the Bleacher Report. We're always thrilled to have him on. How you doing, Adam?
I'm doing well, man. How about yourself?
I'm doing great. You wrote a great piece once again this week at olavisa.com, and it starts sort of, you know, reminiscing about how things change quickly in college football. Now, one of the teams you threw in there, it wasn't your main point, because you were talking mainly about Texas and how they have obviously fallen from grace quickly, and you also, of course, we're talking about the University of Miami, and we'll get into that here momentarily. But you also threw in Boise State, which I can really appreciate. I used to go see a Boise State game up in Boise once a year. I can remember sitting there, Kellen Moore in 2011 when they lost to TCU by a point. They had missed two field goals. You know, they were a national championship contender, and how they've fallen from grace. And that's just sort of the thing when you look at, forget Boise State for a second, when you look at Texas, you point out they've lost 8 of 11. 8 of 11.
Yeah.
Like, that's unbelievable. There's that, and then, of course, there's what you were saying before about you, about the University of Miami. I mean, it's so quick, and yet at the same time, it's quick when it happens, right? But it takes a long time.
It does. It's like a business, right? It's like a business that you see is struggling, and there are signs that maybe it's not the same as it once was, and then it seems to kind of, you do what Miami did, which was lose to Middle Tennessee and give up pass plays. I don't know, 4 pass plays of like 60 yards or more. I mean, that was unbelievable. The funny thing about Boise, by the way, is I like them this weekend in a very gross football game against San Diego State. But no, for me, right, it is a bit nostalgic because I came into this sport and I look at Texas, I look at Miami, and, you know, I like Miami a lot heading into this year. I like Texas quite a bit heading into this year. And the problem with Texas is the whole Texas is back notion. There have been glimpses. The Alabama game, which was a couple of weeks ago, was like, wow, Texas is doing it. And then Texas does this. And that's been the problem. Every time there's a sign that they're coming out of it, they don't. I still think both have tremendous resources. That's the good news for Texas and Miami. In the day age of NIL, you can maybe pull out of it. But it really showed us just how much we have to go here.
Another blue blood in college football, USC, which, you know, they ugly win against Oregon State. You spun that positively in the piece of Easton.com. Let me just sort of have a counter to that, right? Which is, and they, by the way, they're 25.5 point favorites against Arizona State this weekend. But there, you know, there was a piece in ESPN.com, but Bill Connolly wrote one where he talked about how, you know, it's been great that in terms of all their turnovers that they've gotten, but they've intercepted or broken up 24 passes this year while opponents have defensed 11. And so if you went to national averages, right, 24 versus 11, what that ends up being analytically, it would typically result in about 5 picks for USC and about 2.3 for opponents. And instead what you've gotten is 11 for USC and 0 for opponents. Plus they've recovered all 7 of their fumbles in their games too, right? So it's like how much of USC is really smoke and mirrors?
Well, so it's a great data, and there's definitely acknowledging that they've had tremendous luck, and that is tremendous. Hearing it all kind of spewed out too, but I think when you're looking back, I recalibrate to what my expectations for this team was. I think they've surpassed. I know we got a long way to go. Look, they haven't played. I thought the Fresno State game was really impressive. Stanford was, you know, they showed a lot of really good things. The fact that they're finding ways to win a game like that. I think it's okay. Now, truth, we'll find out. The fumble luck, the interception luck, that stuff will, you know, when you play at Utah here in a couple of weeks, that might go away. Utah's a double-digit fave against the team that USC struggled with this week, right? So we'll figure that part out. The fact that they've been able to show that component this quickly, though, I think it's a good thing for long-term trajectory here. And that's kind of the focus. This year, we got a lot to learn. The fact that the offense sputtered, I think the offense will still be good and fine. Oregon State, man, that's a fun team. I don't want to lose sight of that, too. That is a fun game team. When you bet on them or bet against them, man, they tend to bring it.
A couple other things before we get to this week's games, because I'm glad you seized on these two, because it was, you know, it's college football, like you said, you got to embrace the chaos. And there was a couple of things that went down this past week where you're just like, you can't help but laugh. First of all, Felica, our buddy Chris Felica the Bear, who we all know and love, he's in the William Hill College Football Contest. And he was telling me, he was like, oh, man, I can't believe that I didn't play, you know, Wazoo here. And I'm so regretful that I didn't. And then I'm like, and then I text him, I'm like, oh my God, are you going to be so thrilled that you didn't play Wazoo, right? Because Oregon has this unbelievable stretch at the end where Bo Nix hits the long pass, then they have the pick six, only to have that shattered at the end. It's mayhem. And by the way, no one's making any deal of like the clock just going away at the end there. Like we have to believe them that we're 5 seconds left. It was just ridiculous.
I was not invested in this game, right? And I've got my basement set up. I've got the 3 TVs and 2 iPads. And yet, for someone who not invested, I was on my floor at the end, right? I'm just watching this, thinking about everybody holding a ticket in this game. So, Washington State, that's rough. That's rough, but to come back at the end with 1 second with questionable clock management, like that is what I love. I know it's what you love too, right?
Yeah.
We love this about college football. You had a sequence of like a couple hours where you had that. You have a kick hitting the top of the goalpost. You've got missed extra points. You've got a guy fumbling it on the 1-inch line from Missouri. You had, as a bettor last week, it was rough. Pick a game, any game, and there was a sequence there that probably made or cost you money.
Where does the Mizzou loss to Auburn and the nature of that loss rank in your all-timers?
I mean, so it, again, we talk about teams like Miami and Texas, you know, that are down bad. It wasn't just the fumble. You had the offsides on the miss. You know, you had a missed field goal. You had the offsides that gave them another shot at another field goal, which of course Auburn made. They had a very good kicker. You had three distinct that one by them lonesome would be a big deal and would be a bad loss. And you had three within about 10 minutes. The fumble, though, is truly, I mean, that's about as bad as I can recall. I was on my floor a lot last week. That was another one where I'm screaming. And here's the other part of it. Auburn fans were probably mad about it.
Yeah.
Auburn fans want their coach out.
Yeah.
That gave him at least another week. Everyone was miserable watching that football game.
Brian Harsin would have been fired on the field if they lose that.
Yes.
And instead, you're right, it's the trifecta. Mizzou misses a field goal, jumps offside, so of course the Auburn hits the second one, and then in overtime, only having to score as they're going across the goal line. Fumble. It's just incredible. All right, so this week, not the sexiest week of college football, but there are a couple good games. One, NC State, Clemson. Are we feeling good about DJ right now?
We're feeling better, right? We've been pretty hard on him, or at least I have. And I've done a story on it. I've spent time with the kid. A lot of talent there. It came together for a Saturday, and it was pretty impressive. 5 touchdowns, 371 yards. There was not a lot of defense played in that game. I think it goes without saying. I think the part of this game that's really interesting to me is, you know, the total here. I mean, it was 40.5, I think, last night, now to 42. So that felt a little low. I know neither of these offenses have been all that impressive. Both have quarterbacks that are capable. NC State, you know, beat Texas Tech, but it wasn't exactly a blowout, and they certainly haven't compiled a lot of points. The total is the part of this that I've really struggled with. I still feel like this is the problem if you're wanting to back Clemson. Is that Wake Forest win a good win? Of a bad loss to come.
Yeah.
And I think it's a sign of a bad loss. But to me, I think NC State feels very alive. And I still think that total's not high enough. So I'd probably go the underdog here and I'd take the over.
Can Arkansas cover? Can they threaten Alabama for an outright?
They can threaten because they got a good quarterback. But I'll say Alabama's last couple of weeks, which have been cupcakes, I think they've figured a lot of things out. Will Anderson is Will Anderson again, and the wide receivers look like they're starting to figure things out. And that's a big deal. Granted, came against UL Monroe and Vanderbilt. I think this line speaks volumes. Arkansas are very capable. They got to eliminate the dumb mistakes that really cost them last week. I just think Alabama's going to hit its stride here, and I think the Crimson Tide probably are going to cover.
All right, how about Kentucky and Ole Miss? Ole Miss is favored here by just shy of a touchdown. Two teams that felt like they were looking ahead to this battle this week.
Yeah, both pretty ugly. I can say I've watched every team. These two teams, like, this is a game that I'm kind of perplexed by, and I don't know if you feel the same way. Because clearly, you know, with the line, Ole Miss, a touchdown – I think that offense is going to be too much, but from a coaching advantage, even though I love me some Lane Kiffin, I think Mark Stoops has a sizable advantage on that for most weeks, by the way. Again, I go back to the total. 54 is the last I saw. The total here to me seems a little low. I think Ole Miss is going to score points. I don't know what to make of last week's result, though. Hopefully a look-ahead game for both, because if not, this could be a little bit of an ugly game.
Yeah, let me clarify. Ole Miss now a full touchdown, 7-point favorite in that against Kentucky.
Yes.
It's always fun, Adam, and I'm sure we'll have more ridiculous endings this week, so look forward to it, man.
Appreciate it, buddy. Talk to you soon.
Adam Kramer at Kegs and Eggs on Twitter. Jeff Parlay, how did we secure this guest? Next on Baseball and Football on the Other Side.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting.
Football fans can turn a loss into a win with the king of sportsbooks. Just place a single first touchdown score prop bet on every Thursday night pro football game. If your bet loses, you'll receive up to $25 back in free bets. This offer is available all season long. Wager confidently and take your game to the next level with BetMGM. Just log into your account or download the BetMGM app and sign up today. Then wager on any player to score the first touchdown in any pro football game. And if your bet misses, you'll get up to $25 back in free bets. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. New and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable free bets or site credit. Free bets expire, 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi, Nevada, or New York. Skill Alexander, Matt Santos in for the vacationing Kelly Midland. By the way, your pro tip for the hour has to do with similar to what we were talking about with Jason Weingarten yesterday. If you may recall, we were talking about his Michael Harris Rookie of the Year bet and whether he should hedge. There's the theoretical, and then there's the reality of sports betting. And you could do things in theory, but then when the moment comes, sometimes you have to switch up your thinking. Jason's not a hedger by nature, but maybe he wants to hedge for the amount of money on his Michael Harris ticket. We were talking about it this morning in terms of Survivor. And I was telling Derek Stevens again on Sunday, I was like, hey, you know, I have all these theories about Survivor that I've tried and true for year and year. And then sometimes you hit a snag in all of it. And you're like, well, by snag, I mean is this year, there's no confidence in anything. If you guys could throw it back up on the screen here. And the pro tip is really, hey, recognize the difference between your theories and reality. With so much parity in the NFL, you have to be willing to change when the two don't match. So if you have a season 3 weeks in, where you have no confidence, but very little confidence in every team, well, maybe you don't play all of your entries the same way, or them half and half, or whatever. Maybe you play them all differently, which is something I've never done before. It's a new sort of area. So that's really the thing. That's your sports betting tip of the day. With so much parity in the NFL, you have to be willing to change when the two don't match. That's your pro tip of the hour, I should say, brought to you by VSiN and everything at VSiN.com. That's where your pro tip is available, searchable on VSiN.com. 20 a day right here on the network. Jeff Parlay joins us right now. He is the host of two shows, co-host of two shows on the weekend here, all live betting, sometimes with Ben Wilson. The two of them have a ball, sometimes with others. And, of course, he's the star of the Megapod on the Beating the Book podcast as well. And, oh, by the way, it's a producer here on this show. Okay, twice a producer. Producer number 5 and 8, it's Jeff Parlay. How you doing, Parles?
I'm good, Gil. Also, too, you buried the lead on Live Bet Saturday and Sunday. It's produced by Matt Santos.
Oh,
wow. That's the biggest thing of the whole show.
My goodness. I apologize. Matt Santos, what do you have to say for yourself? How many shows are you producing here in the network?
Currently, I'm a little all over the place, but currently... Three.
It's a man who's beaten down. He's like, I don't know. Gil, it's like 7 shows. I can't even count them anymore. All right, Jeff. Big night for the Mets last night. Your Metropolitans. They come back from a 4-0 deficit and get it done in extras against the Marlins. Meanwhile, the Braves had all kinds of trouble scoring against Josiah Gray and the Nats bullpen, and the Nats get it done in extras against the Braves. And that's a big turn of events because now the Braves pretty much, they don't have to sweep the Mets. If they win 2 of 3, we're back to tied where the Mets have the tiebreaker, but with 3 games still to play. But it does change it because the Braves now can't take the lead by winning 2 of 3 is the point here in this upcoming series. How do you feel about your Mets right now? Are you worried? Do you feel good about it? What's the story?
I feel a lot better than I would have if the Mets had blown that game last night, Gil. I'll tell you that. You know, one game up going into the weekend, the task is very simple. Win 2 out of 3 with your 3 best pitchers on the mound, and you win the division now if you're the New York. So I feel just went in tied. I feel pretty darn nervous because as of this moment, I think the Braves are the best team in baseball. I think they're better than the Dodgers. I think their lineup is deeper than L.A., I think they're starting pitching, at least at top of that rotation, especially when Strider comes back, if he does, is as good as what the LA throws out there. But look, if they're the 4 seed, that's a whole different task to make a World Series, as you and I discussed all summer. So yeah. I feel pretty good about where the Mets are. You have DeGrom, Scherzer, and Bassett with a 1-game lead, needing to win 2 games to really put this thing on ice. What else could you have asked for back in April?
Couldn't ask for more. You'd take it every time, for sure. I think you'd also take it if you're the Braves. You know, you're like, okay, well, I thought the Mets would be good, but we like our position too. Would you play the +240 to +260, whatever's out there on the Braves right now? Would you tell people to play that, or would you say, yeah, don't play it anymore?
I would say if you have a really good Mets position and you want to get out of it, I don't mind it. Other than that, I think at this point these games are going to be so evenly priced, Gil. You could just go individual games here.
I think it's at this point it's like, well, we're here. Let's see what happens, kind of thing. Let's go to football. You, of course, are doing the Megapod with me. Oh, a little more than an hour from now, Adam Chernoff, our guest on the Beating the Book Megapod today. We're thrilled to have him on there, and of course, Dad Wishnev from his mom's Cork Attic. You know, different audience here. What are you thinking about? What do you think your top 3 plays might be this weekend in the NFL?
Gil, this is a very, as always, is a difficult card. But this week it's a difficult card for a different reason for me. Because I actually like a whole bunch, which is very rare.
Oh, yeah, no.
That's usually the weeks that you're in trouble, when you like too much and try to parse it down. I will say this, Gil. The one game that will be on there for sure in some fashion will be the Arizona Cardinals. Yes, road. Yes, we know what Kingsbury has been on the road in his NFL career. But how are they an underdog against this Carolina team? Because the Panthers stink. And I understand that Carolina is a 57-yard kick away from Cade York from being 2-1. But this team isn't any good. And Arizona, even though their performance really has been dictated by only one half of football in Vegas of being good, the rest of it has been pretty mediocre. They're still the more talented team. And also, I know we kind of put to bed the West Coast team flying to East Coast early in the day. This is a 4 o'clock Eastern. Confident in taking a West Coast team going east, so that will be in there.
Yeah,
let me
interrupt for 1 second. Let me spoil your flow here. I apologize for 1 second. And just add that was one of my 5 millions plays. I don't know if it'll get in my top three for the Megapod or not. I'm with you on the Cardinals, and I just want to throw out that stat again because for me, it is the most incredible stat uttered in the NFL this year. When it traces back, so again, for those who have missed this, we've said it on multiple platforms, but if you've missed it, the Carolina Panthers under Matt Rhule, when the opponent scores 17 points or more, again, not 24 or more, not 30 or more, we're talking about 17. We're talking about practice here. We're talking about 17. Matt Rhule's Carolina Panthers, when the opponent scores 17 or more, are 1-25 straight up. So if you look at it through that prism as well, and you think about Kyler Murray and the Cardinals, you're like, well, I mean, if they can get to 17, right? I mean, throw that in the mix, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Definitely. And again, that stat is still unbelievable.
It's mind-boggling.
It's mind-boggling. The other ones that are in consideration, I haven't made up my mind. Laying 3 with Dallas against your Commanders, Gilly.
How dare you.
Washington really just looks terrible through 3 weeks. And then one other one, at least under consideration, I don't know if we'll make it into my top three, is Cleveland. I'm kind of surprised that the Browns are only a 1.5-point favorite on the road against Atlanta. I understand that Myles Garrett won't play in this game after suffering, getting in that car accident and seemingly getting pretty fortunate, all things considered, with the injuries that he suffered in that accident. But Cleveland's looked really good, and they're one fluky thing away from being 3-0, and they're less than a field goal against Atlanta. And I know the Falcons, at least offensively, have looked much better than we thought they would. That seems a little bit cheap on Cleveland. So 1.5 on the road, that very well may make my top three later today on a Megapod.
Are you in Circa Millions? Is it you and Wes Reynolds again combining?
Yes. It sure is, yes.
Okay. How, for those who are in, you know, groups in a contest, or those considering being in one perhaps next year, what is the dynamic between you and Wes? Do you guys come to blows at some point over a game? Is it tense? Is it amiable? How does it work out?
We're pretty cordial when push comes to shove. The only thing that happens is you're going to have to be willing to play a side that you don't like that your partner really likes. And last week, Gil, one of those sides ended up getting home, and that was the Denver Broncos on Sunday night, where I didn't want anything to do with that. And somehow, Denver not only covered, but won 11-10. So, look, we're off to a pretty slow start. We're 8-7 in both contests right now. We'd obviously like to be at 10-5 through three weeks, but it's a 1 week to go in the quarter at Circa, and then, Gil, it's a whole new season over there.
It's a whole new season. That's right. Quarter by quarter. You could play it that way, of course, while you're putting your eyes on the season-long prize as well. All right, Jeff, I'll see you in about an hour. Can't do brunch with you afterwards. I'm sorry. Got things to do. Apologies for that. But Jeff Parles, once again, Todd Wishnev, and today's guest on the Beating the Book Megapod, the Beating the Book podcast, Adam Chernoff from the Simple Handicap, and, of course, Covers. He will join us as well. Thank you, Parlay. We'll see you soon.
See you soon, Gil. Thank you.
Jeffrey, everybody, producer 5-8 on this here program back in the day, doing big things. We hope only for his profile to grow and grow. Bill Krakenberger on the other side, as well as Josh Towers, as well as Andy McNeil. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.